Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff, only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk? Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
Hi, everybody. I am coming to you live from one of my favorite parks in Rockville, Maryland, where I actually was a couple weeks ago and met a guy named Tim Allen, who is Mr. Exercise, and I talked to him a little bit, and he was a part of our radio show last week where we talked about hard work. I did that show from a parking lot in Wisconsin, about 120 miles northwest of Chicago, as we were called out there to clean out a storage unit. And I'll tell you more about that adventure a little bit later if we have time in the show, but it was great fun. I flew back last night and am here today in a park to do a radio show with a very good friend of mine, a great lady who knows the ins and outs of personal organizing, hoarding, and the psychology behind it. Her name is Mimi Seek. And Mimi, we are thrilled to have you on the program today. Can you hear me okay?
Thank you so much. Yes, I can. You cut out a little bit there, but I think it should be good. I'm not sure what's going on. But yes,
okay.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I love having you on the show. Mimi and I have teamed up over the years to do some different jobs. Where she has kind of called us in as a junk removal company after she's been working with some people as the personal organizer. Mimi, do you want to just take a minute and tell everybody a little bit about yourself, just some of your background, and then a little bit about your company, a lighter home?
Sure. So I have my master's in clinical psychology, and, I was doing that track for a little while, and I realized that I wanted to be more hands-on with my clients. I wanted to help in a different way, in a more hands-on way. So that was about 10 years ago, and I was living in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I moved up here for other reasons other than organizing. But I did fall into organizing. I fell into this great company, met a lot of people, was taught a lot about organizing, about chronic disorganization, about ADHD, and things that were already on my radar, but to be honest, I had no idea that organizing was a thing. I kind of fell into it, and I fell in love with it, and here I am today. So now what I do is I'm a certified professional organizer through NAPO. That's the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. They're, the foremost leader in organizing. My clientele, I specialize in people with chronic disorganization, people who have been diagnosed with hoarding disorder, people who have executive functioning challenges, who are living with those, and people living with ADHD.
Well, you sound like you have the perfect background for that. Did you say it was a master's degree in clinical psychology?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Was it from the University of North Carolina?
It was from East Carolina University.
East Carolina. That's right. That's right. You told me about that before. Okay. So do people typically, how do you typically get involved in a customer's life? Do they call you up and say, hey, I understand you're a personal organizer? Do you get leads from realtors who need help with this? How do you typically get your customers?
So a lot of my customers are direct referrals from other clients that I've seen. You know, organizing is such an intimate thing that we really build a lot of trust with our clients. So, you know, once it's through word of mouth, but, you know, realtors are a big thing for us too. I actually have a bunch of realtors that I've personally worked with who have now referred me out to their own, you know, realty clients. A lot of it is, you know, a realtor will come into your home and see that it needs some decluttering. I've worked with staging professionals who will stage a home, but, you know, a lot of times we have a lot more stuff in our home that needs to be in there for staging. So a stager will refer out to professional organizers to kind of help declutter first before they take those, you know, picture perfect pictures to be put online or whatever. So I also work with a lot of therapists. So, you know, a lot of therapists who are, you know, refer out to their clients.
You talked about people that get diagnosed with, I'm going to call it hoarding disorder, so correct me if I use the wrong words, which I probably will. But tell me about that process. How do you get diagnosed with that? What happens there?
So, you know, from my experience, a lot of times let me back up a little bit. Every person is different. Every situation is different. For me, it's been people who, unfortunately, you know, are kind of on a timeline where, you know, they're mandated to clear out a house or they're already working with a therapist, and the therapist has kind of pinpointed this as a, you know, they've been diagnosed, they talk to their therapist about what's going on, they get diagnosed and then get referred to me for more of the hands-on work. A lot of it, you know, I know when we bring up hoarding disorder, people automatically, you know, think of the show Hoarders, it's definitely, you know, the show is, it's made for entertainment, so it's sensationalized. It doesn't really bring it into account all the emotional stuff, all the emotional baggage that comes along with hoarding disorder. So in those situations, it's dire, right? These people are going to lose their homes. They're going to lose their children. It's unsafe for them to be in there, so they're being evicted and all these things. And that, you know, it does happen. But those people usually are not doing it because they want to. So I kind of come in a little bit before them where they, you know, recognize that they may have an issue or, you know, sometimes it's even family members that call and are like, you know, my loved one has an issue. Either they haven't been diagnosed with hoarding disorder or, you know, it's pretty obvious when that is what it is. So, you know, loved ones will call. And I personally will not work with somebody, whether they're diagnosed or not, with hoarding tendencies, unless they're actively working with a therapist also. I just find it's the best way. I'm a big proponent of harm reduction, so do no harm. And I think the therapist is a very important piece in, you know, making sure that everyone's okay.
It's a wonderful thing, the psychology behind this, and I see this I don't see it as much as you do because you're, I don't think anyway, because you're getting involved in this when there's some kind of a, you know, a little bit of a desperate or a chronic need to get rid of a bunch of stuff that's in a house. You know, they call us if they have a fridge they want to get rid of. But every once in a while, we see some situations that are flat out over the top, you know, where is Mimi to help me with this kind of situation?
Sure. And, yeah. I mean, yeah, it happens a lot. Yeah.
It does. It does. And, you know, one situation that comes to mind, we were asked to clear out a home in Kensington, Maryland, a number of years ago. And I don't drink alcohol, so I don't know what this drink was that people were making. But when we walked into the kitchen, there were hundreds of cartons of empty orange juice cartons, hundreds of bottles of something else, and hundreds of bottles of something else. Somebody made some kind of drink or something in that kitchen. I don't know what it was.
And lots of it, sounds like.
Yeah, the bottles themselves and the cartons were so high stacked up in the kitchen that they covered the kitchen cabinets and the stove.
So
it was a solid mess. It took us 2 hours just to clean out the kitchen. And I don't understand the psychology behind that, right? I mean, I don't get it. But the living room was in a very similar situation. It's just the way some people go through life and do what they do. And I'm sure you've seen all kinds of situations as well. But what's great about having you on the show is that you understand what's going on behind the scenes, kind of in someone's mind and in their life, that causes them to do this kind of, you know, this kind of behavior. I just kind of go in and go, okay, we got to get this cleaned out. But I don't really understand the psychology behind it, which is why I'm so fascinated to have you on the show. I'm going to ask you a simple question, but I'm sure there's multiple, probably lengthy answers to this.
Sure.
If someone just said, hey, Mimi, why do hoarders hoard?
Oh,
what
man.
What would you say? That's a loaded question, isn't it?
That is a very loaded question. Well, going back to your situation with the empty cans and the bottles and things, let me ask you if the person who called you or the person that was making these drinks, did they have difficulty letting you take those bottles, or was it just come and take these things?
It was come and take these things, but I can't tell you for sure if it was the actual homeowner that called us or if it was a family member that called us. I don't remember.
So I think that there's a difference there, right, between there's a big difference between clutter and actual hoarding, right? Clutter and, you know, junk and things stacked up to the ceiling, that's only a symptom of hoarding disorder. So hoarding disorder is, it's a serious behavioral and mental disorder that's actually in the DSM-5, and it's diagnosable. It's also treatable, right? But there are specific diagnostic criteria to meet a diagnosis for this. One of which, you know, one of the criteria, I'll just go through the criteria. Persistent difficulty discarding or parting with items, regardless of value. So they could have gone and, you know, paid a lot of money for these things, or it could be things that they've picked up off the street for free. The difficulty is due to a perceived need to save these items. And, you know, there's also a distress associated with discarding these items. So whether the distress comes from, you know, I want to save the land, I want to save the earth, and I don't want to put things in the landfill, or, you know, these items mean something to me, whether it's, you know, memorabilia, like, oh, Alan gave me this, you know, this mug, and I can't give it away, or I'll, you know, either he'll be upset with me, or it reminds me of him, so I like it, or the symptoms, the clutter and the accumulation, result in an accumulation of possessions that congest and clutter active living areas. These, you know, the cluttered living areas will cause significant distress in social relationships, occupational relationships, or other important areas of functioning. You know, you can't have anybody in your home anymore. You kind of isolate yourself from the world, from your family members. You know, I'm sure you've heard it all before. You know, oh, my mom's a hoarder, or my dad's a hoarder. That, you know, I haven't been over to their house in X amount of years because they won't let me in anymore, or, you know, I never see this person anymore. So those four kind of criteria have to be met in order to be diagnosed. But in terms of why do people hoard, that's a little bit more complicated. You know, there are several different reasons, and they range from problems with information processing. So, you know, attention issues, memory challenges, difficulties making decisions. You know, a lot of times we hear like, oh, I don't know what to do with that. But, you know, I can't really get rid of it. So that's not really a decision that's made. It's just, it's a non-decision, right? You know, on the other end of it, it's, you know, personal and family vulnerabilities. It could be a history of trauma. It could have to do with comorbid disorders. It could have to do with, you know, a lot of times, I can't remember off the top of my head the percentage of people who are diagnosed with hoarding disorder who actually have other disorders, whether it's you know, mood disorders, depression, anxiety, things like that. So it's a wide variety of reasons.
Yes, yes. In a given month, let's just say, all the different work that you do and the different jobs that you do, what's just a rough guess of the percentage of those jobs that are involved in hoarding as compared to non-hoarding jobs where you're going in and just helping somebody get more organized for what I'm sure is a myriad of reasons?
You know, that's a tough one too, because all the jobs that I do are so different, and they kind of rotate in between. Because so sometimes I'll have two or three hoarding cases that take me, you know, years to complete. Wow. Sometimes I'm doing maintenance with a hoarding client that I've been seeing for years. So it's really different, but I can tell you that 5 to 6% of the U.S. population meet the criteria for hoarding disorder.
That's a ton of people.
That's 1 in 20 people that that's 1 in 20. And granted, not, you know, it's even lesser of a percentage of people who are asking for the help, right?
Right.
But, yeah.
Amazing. Okay. Well, I have to tell you, we're going to take a break here in about a minute or so, but
sure.
I've gone out on different jobs that Mimi has contacted us to come and help out and to haul away some junk. This young lady is a worker. I mean, she is a worker, and it's like she has no fear and there's no challenge too big, because I have gone in to do some jobs to just haul away some stuff, and there's a sofa that's got to be carried out, and Mimi just says, hey, no problem, I'll help you, and she'll grab one end, and off we go. She's just like, she's a very strong energizer bunny, that's what she is, and she just keeps going, and she can do it, and she can get it done, and she's an absolute joy to work with, and I'm sure your clients feel the same way. I've worked with you, and you just do a fabulous job. So
Thank you so much for saying that.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. We're going to come back and talk more about the world of personal organizing. I'm here with Mimi Seek from A Lighter Home. You're listening to the Junk Refund Show on bbsradio.com. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. recycle stuff like metal and wire, donate items and get you receipts, and put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Welcome back to Junk Refund Show. This is Alan Cook coming to you from Rockville, Maryland. I founded a company about 20 years ago called 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, and we put the word refund in there because it means what it says, and it seems to need a little bit of clarification. A refund is money you get back after you first paid for something. So as we advertise our services, we tell people that we're a little different than the run-of-the-mill junk removal business because we're looking for the good stuff that you have as well as everything else. We junk the junk. We donate stuff and get you receipts. We go through and recycle stuff like metal and wire. But the step that we take that everybody else doesn't take for whatever reason is we look for the good stuff that we think someone might buy, and then we put it up for sale, and if they buy it, you get some money back. You get 35% of anything that we sell for more than $20. Which takes me back to a couple of days ago when we were hired by a wonderful lady and her son-in-law in Wisconsin. And I always have to stop for a second. It took me like 2 days just to pronounce the correct name of the city, but it is Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. I think it's five O's in that name. Oconomowoc, Wisconsin is where we were. And we're out in these gorgeous green fields with corn stalks everywhere for acres and acres and miles and miles. This beautiful, slightly hilly country with farmers and farmers' products everywhere you can see. And it was very appropriate that last week the show was talking about hard work and how to do hard work. But here's an example of what we did, just to bring you up to what my life's been like. And I invite you to go to our YouTube channel, to 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, and watch the video, a 7 or 8 minute video called Winning in Wisconsin. A lady hires us to clean out her storage unit. It's probably a 10 by 30 storage unit. We estimated it was 2.5 12-foot box trucks of stuff. Now, as I go and look at it, and they raise the door up, and I'm there with her son-in-law and herself, I see this storage unit, which I asked the son-in-law, a guy named Brian, I said, now just look at the left half of this storage unit. Tell me approximately how high it is on average from here back to the back. And he said, it's about 6 feet high, the stuff. It's about 5 feet wide. It's about 24 feet long. So you do the math. It's a volume calculation. And you do the math and you figure out, oh, that's going to be a couple of truckloads of stuff. One of the things that caught my attention right off the bat, and I asked the lady before I did anything there, I said, is there anything in here you want? And she said, nope, take it all. And I get the sense that this was a bunch of stuff that may have been put there from a family situation in the past where perhaps her spouse had passed away or something, and this was a bunch of stuff that got put in the storage unit. And I also got the sense that it had been there for a while. One of the first things I look at, and remember, I'm in Wisconsin. So I'm looking at a transparent bin, a transparent kind of plastic bin there. And there's an Aaron Rodgers Green Bay Packers football jersey and a bunch of other Green Bay Packers stuff, scarves, you know, beanie caps, Christmas ornaments, everything Packers is in this one bin. I thought, oh, okay, that's kind of interesting. And, you know, I've got a daughter who got married 2 months ago, and she married a guy who loves the Green Bay Packers. I've also got a nephew out in San Diego who loves Aaron Rodgers. And so I held on to some of that Packers stuff and just put it in the truck in the back seat. But as we go through and start cleaning out this stuff, and this is kind of the bottom line, there's a bin in there that as you open up this bin and you just kind of go through it real quick, you see these rectangular-shaped boxes, somewhat looking like jewelry boxes, but they're bigger and just kind of basic and somewhat flat. You pull the lid off one of those, and there's some kind of a collectible coin in there in a plastic, you know, case or container. We had 7 or 8 of those and a couple of bags. There was a bag of nickels. There was a bag of pennies, small stuff. I took all of that and set it in the middle of the truck in the front and just thought, okay, we got to take these to a coin dealer and see if these are worth anything. So over the course of a couple of days, we cleaned out the storage unit, made a lot of donation runs, made some junk removal runs, got everything done, then went over to the son-in-law's house, took a couple of pickup truck loads out of his garage, got that done. He had told me that the stuff that was in his garage was from his grandmother and maybe even his great-grandmother that had been passed down from generation to generation and had been there for a while. I think she used to live with them or something. She was not with them anymore, but all of her stuff was still in the garage. And he told me after we cleaned out that garage, he said, I haven't been able to use this garage in 3 years. He was thrilled. So we get all this stuff. We get the job done. I take off and go back down to Chicago. And on Monday, I start a new job in Chicago, cleaning out part of a house for a lady who's going to move to Georgia. No hoarding situation, nothing like that. But just they're doing a job. And on my way running back to the house with another load of stuff that I just come from the dump, I pass a coin dealer. And I went, I should stop here. So I go into the coin dealer, take in the 7 or 8 boxes that I have from the Wisconsin job. The guy starts to look at them. He flips one. He grabs a little piece of scratch paper, starts making notes on what stuff's worth. He flips open one of those boxes. It's a small coin about the size of a nickel, but it's gold. And it's all encased in plastic and stuff, but with a certificate of authenticity and stuff like that. He looks at that, and he looks at me, and he goes, that's a quarter ounce of gold. He says, gold's $1,900 an ounce. He said, this is worth about $500. Well, the bottom line is he paid me $650 cash for these 7 little boxes of coins. Now, the people in Wisconsin had no idea that that was in there, and thank heavens we didn't just take the bin and throw it in the dump, because the people in Wisconsin get 35% of the $650, $200 and something, $225, $230, something like that, and they don't know it yet. I just got back from the Chicago job late last night. They don't even know that we made the money for them yet. That I can't wait to make that call or send Brian a text and say, hey, by the way, we just made some money off the stuff that was in the storage unit, and they're going to be thrilled to get some money back. So there's a story right off the top of my head from something that happened in the last week that illustrates why we're different than other junk removal companies. And I got to be honest with you, I did not look up on eBay to see what an Aaron Rodgers jersey is going for these days, given that he's now with the New York Jets. I don't know if the people in Wisconsin are using his jerseys to start fires in their fireplaces now, or if they're collecting them because they're, you know, memorabilia that you're never going to see again, or if the people in New York City are, you know, burning the Packers jerseys because they're all thrilled that he's a Jet now. I have no clue. I just know that my nephew wanted an Aaron Rodgers jersey. So I took a picture of it and sent him a text and said, would you like this? I didn't hear back from him. But in the meantime, I traveled from Wisconsin on Saturday night, 4 hours down into a place called Nauvoo, Illinois, where my 35-year-old daughter is performing in an outdoor pageant with her husband for the summer. I get to go down and watch their performance. And the next day on Sunday, as we're going around looking at some historical stuff in Nauvoo, Illinois, she makes mention to me that her new husband, Jake, and his dad are massively big fans of, yes, you guessed it, the Green Bay Packers. And so I simply said, hey, have I got a present for you? And I took the box that was in the truck with the jersey in it and all the little Christmas ornaments and the scarves and whatever. I just said, here, give this to Jake. Just give it to him, and when I hear back from my nephew, if he wants an Aaron Rodgers jersey, I'll get him one off NFL.com or something. So there's a little insight into kind of how much fun we have doing what we do, and some stories just live. Go to YouTube, go to 1-800-JunkRefund.com and watch the video called, there's two of them. One of them says Winning in Wisconsin. The second one says Cashing in Chicago. And you'll see what my life has been like for the last week. So there's a little tidbit about our company and what sets us apart. But back to our guest, Mimi Seek, who is a pro at personal organizing and understanding what's behind the psychology of collecting stuff and just not being able to let go of it. Mimi, can we talk for just a moment about that issue of, and maybe some thoughts for people about how they can kind of look for signs that maybe somebody needs some help like you can give them. What are some of the key words that you look for or sayings that people will say that suggest to you that somebody may need to come in and help them deal with some of this clutter in their life? In my business, it's the word might. When people say, I might use that, right? I look for that word, and that word causes so many people to hold on to stuff that, in my opinion, they're never going to use for 10 years. Take it away. What are some of the things that you look for or that we should look for that might help us understand the psychology behind some of these behaviors?
You know, it's funny because it's the same word for me. I might need that. I never know if I'm going to need that. I like to be prepared. I'm going to keep that just in case. And, you know, for me, it's about helping the clients make the best decisions, right? We use lots of techniques, whether it's something that we call future purging. So we take all these items that, you know, you might need, or you might, you know, I might fix this, or I might do this with it. You know, I want to be prepared. We take these things and we'll pack them away, and we put a date on the box, for example. And, you know, I'll put today's date. And then in 6 months, if you haven't used it, or, you know, we always work with this.
Right.
So it's either, you know, are you comfortable with 6 months? Are you comfortable with a year, maybe? So in a year, if you haven't come back to it, if you haven't looked for it, if you haven't used it, if you haven't thought, oh, let me, you know, fix that stitch on that old jacket, then the whole box just goes, right? So helping...
Do they let you get rid of the box 6 months later after you've mutually agreed on it? Do they still want to hold on to it after the date has come and passed?
Yes and no. You know, I've definitely had clients that are like, wait, can we reevaluate? And yeah. So there have been definitely people who have said, wait a second, I want to open it back up and see what's in there. But the majority of the time, you know, these people are coming to me for help. So we have to keep that one in mind. Is generally my client population, they're here and they put their trust in me, right? So that's a big part of this. So we kind of make a deal and I'll ask, are you okay with that? You know, 6 months from now, a year from now, if we haven't touched it, if you haven't even looked in the box, then we can get rid of it. And usually, they're like, okay, I made a promise, I made a deal, and I'm going to hold up my end of the deal.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah,
totally. So it's using these kind of techniques to make them feel a little bit more in control, right? But a lot of times that's anxiety inducing is, you know, oh, I'm going to have somebody come into my house and touch all my stuff and throw everything away. But I really, one of the first things I say to a lot of clients is that you are the boss, right? Whatever you say goes, I'm just here to help you make the best decision.
That's a really good approach.
Yeah. So, you know, once they feel like they are in control of the situation, and that, you know, sets people up for long-term success, right? If we come in and, you know, just like the show hoarders. We come in and we just bulldoze through the whole house and throw everything out, and they don't have a chance to really reconcile their emotions. They don't have a chance to even look at a lot of things. A lot of times it is just about, you know, telling me the story of how Alan, my favorite junk guy, gave me this mug, and, you know, he's a really nice guy, and we had some good times, and then now it's okay to let it go because I've told the story of it, and it can be, I don't use it anyway, so somebody else can use it. So donations and things like you do is huge, right? If people feel like, you know, they're not just filling up a landfill with these things, if we can donate, I do huge donations to charities. That's my biggest thing, is I'll always try to find a home for it somewhere in the world, right, before taking it to the landfill. And I think, I was just going to say, and I think that part of what you do, it's like, giving them a refund for the things that are, you know, worth selling, that's huge for clients too, because a lot of times it's, you know, things that they've spent a lot of money on, and, you know, I don't want to just donate it, and so it sits in the house and it collects stuff because they don't want to donate it, but they can't make that step to sell it online. And a lot of times that is what it is. It's like, there's a lot of thrifting going on. You know, I'm going to buy this, I'm going to flip it on eBay. But that takes so much time. And I know you know how much time it takes to list something.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking about a job we did in Potomac a number of years ago where a gentleman who frankly had made a few bucks in this area, I can't remember what restaurants he owned, but he had done really well in this area, and they had a handmade or handcrafted dining room set with buffet and cabinets, I think made in the Philippines is where it was. And I think they paid 15 or 20 grand for it, something like that. And they're getting ready to move. This was originally what they paid for. They're getting ready to move, and this stuff is still sitting there. It was in immaculate condition, and they were doing an estate sale on the weekend, and they're trying to get it sold. And I don't remember, because it's been so long, the exact numbers, but I think somebody offered them like $1,000 or something, maybe something like that. And they're going, it's worth more, but they got to get it out of there because I think they had sold their home, so they got to do something with it. We put an ad out on eBay, and a lady in, I don't know, let's just say she was from Texas. Let's just say Houston, Texas. She sees it. She sees the ad. She contacts me. She says, how much does he want for this set? This is a beautiful set. And I had talked to the guy before, and he said, you know, I said, how much, give me the number that if we sold this set for X amount of dollars, you'd start doing backflips because you're so excited. And the guy said something like $4,000, something like that. He's not going to get 12 or 15,000, but he wants to get more than 1,000. And so the lady asked me, how much are you trying to get out of it? And I said, if we got $4,000, we'd be thrilled. $5,000 is even better. We know we're not going to get 10 or 12. And she goes, it looks like a really nice set. I'll take it for $5,000.
Nice.
And she said, can we come pick it up this weekend? Or no, and she may have even done it quicker. I said, sure. Well, she gives us a deposit for it. And she and her son fly up from Houston to D.C. like the next day, rent a U-Haul truck, come over. We load it all in the truck for him. She pays the rest of it, got it all in the truck. And now her son's job is to drive her and her new dining room set back to Houston. And I just looked at her with a smile on my face. I said, man, you folks from Texas, you make things happen, don't you? You think big down there.
Yeah,
you put your actions where your mouth is. I was just thrilled. The guy was thrilled. And it just shows you the value of using technology to try to get something sold for somebody. And like you said, to, you know, either donate this set or do something with it, and they were thrilled to get some money back as a result of the sale. So,
yeah,
another story from the annals of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. But we're going to take another break real quick. We're going to come back and talk more with Mimi Seek, my good friend who is a professional organizer and not only can do the physical hard work and help out if you need that done, and she just, the gal doesn't sweat. She just does the work and moves on to the next thing. It's amazing. But she also understands the psychological background behind this, and that's the key. You're welcome to call in. We got about 20 more minutes on the show, 888-627-6008. You can call in live and ask Mimi a question. She's a real pro. We'll be back here in a few minutes on the Junk Refund Show on bbsradio.com.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
So you're back with the Junk Refund Show. My guest, Mimi Seek, who is a professional organizer in the Washington, D.C. area, has a company called A Lighter Home, which is a very appropriate name because she tries to lighten the stuff that is in your home that might be cluttering up your home, etc. Tell us, Mimi, what's the difference between a personal organizer and a junk removal guy like me, just so people understand?
Well, we work very well together, right? A professional organizer and a
yes.
junk removal company. I need to lean on you all the time. But, you know, the difference is that a professional organizer will help you make the decisions to donate trash, sell the items in your home. I'll come through and, we'll categorize and sort everything out, and then I'm standing right next to you and asking you the questions that will help you make the best decision. How long have you had this? Does it work? Do you want to keep it? Where's the best place to keep it? All that. And then on the back end, I'm calling Alan to come in and haul the stuff away. It's a team effort for sure. Especially in these bigger jobs.
Answer.
Yeah.
What's the worst thing for those of us who might have a concern, a family member or something like this that might need some help? What's the worst thing we could say to a hoarder that is going to backfire if we try to help them with their problem?
Oh,
thing to say?
Don't you want to live, you've seen my house. Don't you want to live like that? I've heard, people say, oh, this would take me two days to clear out. Just let me do it. Just go on a vacation. How about I pay for a vacation for you? You leave town and I'll clear out the house. That's immediately an anxiety attack, I think.
What's the best thing you can say that would help the most?
The better approach is a compassionate, a kind one. Do your research, and realize that this isn't a laziness thing. It's not a dirtiness thing. It's not you're just a slob. A lot of people, don't realize that it's an actual hoarding, at least, is an actual disorder, and people deserve kindness and compassion. No matter what, right? Everybody deserves kindness and compassion. So coming in and kind of putting someone down because of how they're living it's never a good conversation starter. A better conversation starter could be, how are you feeling about this? What can I do to help? You know, there are resources out there. Can I point you to these resources? There are ways to get help.
I love your kindness and I love that approach. It's probably why you're so successful. I love that kindness and compassion, those two words, and the third one, what can I do to help? Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Nobody's going to get offended or threatened or stressed out with kindness and compassion, right?
And just they probably having that understanding,
Yes, I think that is a brilliant understanding, and a great thing to remember for the, let's just say, the average folks out there who are not hoarders, mm-hmm. don't have some kind of anxiety disorder. But let's be honest, I drive down the street and I say to myself, every one of these homes has a pickup truck of stuff that could be hauled away. I mean, they all
do. Oh, sure.
And
absolutely.
Most of them probably have more than one, right? What are mm-hmm. some, how do you help the average guy and gal out there who aren't hoarders have a little bit more of a decluttered life? Do you have any suggestions for the
sure.
average Joe and Jolene out there who might need some tips?
Well, you know, besides hiring a professional organizer, I would say to start slow and start in one area of the house, right? It's very easy to sit down and say, oh my gosh, my house, you know, there's so many places that I need to declutter in my house. But starting in one area, you know, even just starting in your junk drawer, and kind of getting that done, can help build your confidence and kind of, you know, and kind of get you started on the right foot. I would say start in your storage areas, any storage area in closets, basement storage areas, attics, not right now. Right now is not the right time to get into your attic.
Exactly. Unless you live in Alaska, then it's not bad.
Right. We tend to do attics in the spring and fall. But anyway, starting in your storage area, right? Because if you can get your storage area cleared out and organized, then that gives you breathing space for every other area in your home. So we like to always, you know, start in there. And then when you're doing the kitchen, you know, extra kitchen appliances can go downstairs into storage. If you're, you know, doing your closet, then extra, you know, off-season clothes can go into storage.
Starting small and taking little steps adds up quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
In your experience, all the people that you've helped over the years, have you gone into somebody's home and you're helping them to organize some stuff, and all of a sudden you found an item that you went, holy cow, I can't believe you have one of these. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes, I'm sure I have. I'm trying to think of a specific. I've seen some stuff, Alan.
I'm sure you have.
You know,
we went into a guy's home in Potomac one time, and he had 7 Emmy awards on his mantelpiece above. He was a sound guy, I think, and he had 7 or 8 Emmy awards on his fireplace mantle. And he didn't get rid of them, but I went in and went, wow, tell me more. Anyway, I'm just curious what you've seen.
You know, we've seen everything from, you know, sadly, like cremated remains of loved ones in the middle of clutter. But we've seen, you know, I had a client that had said, you know, I have this, you know, special edition Rolex. It was my dad's. It was like one of one. I can't find it. That's one thing I'm looking for. And we found it, and, you know, she was very grateful. And, we found so many different things. You know, a lot of collectible baseball cards. I found the Mickey Mantle ones. It got graded at an 8 or 8.5 or something like that. That was worth big money. I don't know.
I'm going to say 62. I'm not sure if that's the right year. Mickey Mantle baseball card just sold for $12 million. I just heard that last week.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Tell me how you charge people in the personal organizing business. Is it by the hour? Is it by the job? How does that typically work?
So that's an interesting question. I charge it by the session. So a full day session is 7 hours. I work from 8 to 3. I charge that way. But a lot of the population that I work with, that have ADHD or chronically disorganized, a lot of times 7 hours is way too long. So we'll do half day sessions, which are 4 hours. But I'm super flexible. Sometimes I have, like yesterday I had a client and we worked for 2 hours and then she was like, I'm wiped out. I can't do anymore.
We ended it
and it's totally fine.
That's great. That's great that you're so flexible with it. It's basically a counseling / hands-on work session, it sounds like, which is a great approach to do this. Tell me, just to make sure everybody knows, how do people get a hold of you if they want to talk more about you and consider having your business come in and help them out?
Sure. So my website is now live, even though there's some tweaks. It's alighterhome.com. My phone number is 860-480-7330. You can always reach me there. And my email is alighterhome@gmail.com.
So repeat all three of those one more time, just because people usually need to hear them a couple of times.
Sure. So my website is alighterhome. It's alighterhome.com. My phone number is 860-480-7330. And my email is alighterhome@gmail.com.
Let me ask you this. What do you like most about your job?
Oh, man. I love helping people. The big hug I get at the end of the day when someone, or that sigh of relief that someone has when a project's done, even if we're not completing the entire house, that's where I get a lighter home from is, I hear that a lot from clients. It's like, I feel so much lighter.
That's great.
And it's just a huge, correlation between your mental health and, your physical health. It all ties in. My mom used to say, if your room's clean, you'll have a better night's sleep. I never believed her until, I grew up and it was true.
I don't remember who the military, I'm going to call him a general. I don't think he's a general, but he's from the University of Texas at Austin, and he's known on YouTube for his commencement speeches, and he gave one on YouTube at the University of Texas a number of years ago that's kind of gone viral. And one of the things, he's a Navy SEAL, and one of the things he talks about is the simple, he said, if you want to make a change in the world, if you want to change the world, make your bed.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, as a trainer, going back to what you just said about having a cleaner, right, a cleaner environment helps you sleep better at night. He says, in the morning, we would get up early, we would make our bed, we would go out, and they would dump all kinds of stuff on us mentally and physically all day long. And if you had the worst day in the world out during all this training for, let's say, 12 or 16 hours, and you come back in at the end of the day, and they've made you feel like crap, and they've pushed you and pushed you and pushed you, and you basically said to yourself, I don't think I can do this. What in the world am I doing here? When you come back in, let's say, to your barracks, and you see your beds made, it tells you psychologically that you can be successful at something else, too.
Totally. I completely agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was a brilliant statement to make in front of thousands of graduates at the University of Texas, is that if you want to make a change in the world, make your bed.
Yeah.
Because there's a huge
simple as that.
Psychological effect there. Yeah. I think
totally.
That's marvelous. I have to ask you a little bit about your friend Karen Sullivan, who also you have done some contract work with. Tell me just kind of quickly about her business and what she does and how you guys have ended up working together as well.
Sure. So Karen owns a business called Organizing Genies, and Karen and I actually both started the Genies together. We started it in 2019, right before the pandemic. And in 2020, I had to take a step away because I had to go take care of my dad. And Karen took it and ran. So now I contract with her. We do big group projects together. And, you know, we have the same philosophy. We just want to help people. She's amazing. Yeah.
You guys do great work together. And I know you kind of have separate companies, but you also can team up and work together and do some stuff. And I think that's marvelous. When you were at East Carolina and you're getting a mm-hmm. master's degree in clinical psychology, correct me if I'm wrong, but the thought on day one when you went into classes probably was not that you're going to go out and be a personal organizer for people. Am I right?
Not right. I mean, it wasn't even on my radar. I didn't even think that that was a thing. Like I said, I had no idea that that was a thing that people did as a career. And yeah, the thought was that I was going to be a clinician. I was going to be a therapist. And, you know, after I graduated, I had a job and I was doing that thing and I was sitting behind the desk and it just, you know, I was helping people, but not in the way that it really fulfilled me. And this has really done it for me.
I think it's a wonderful thing. And I think it also illustrates the point. Sometimes when people are in school and they're trying to figure out a career, you know, I had a roommate back in college who at the age of 5 said that he knew he wanted to be a dentist.
Mm.
And he's one of the most successful orthodontist dentists in Las Vegas. It just all fell into place with him. And I used to sit there in my little college room with him, kind of a room next door to him, and I would think to myself, where did I go wrong? I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do. I have no idea. I just know that I got a C in chemistry, so I probably shouldn't be a doctor.
Yeah.
And I kind of was doing the process of elimination. And yet there are some people who at the age of 5 just kind of know what they're going to do. I think those are the drastic exceptions to the rule.
Oh,
and I think
I
it's the Mimi Seeks and the Alan Cooks that go out and go, okay, I don't know for sure what I'm going to do. I'm just going to move in a logical direction that I enjoy. And then let the pieces
you
of
just
the puzzle
follow
come
your
together
heart.
As it comes together, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. You know, when I was growing up, I have ADHD myself. I was diagnosed when I was in college, when I was in undergrad, actually. So I grew up and I was not an organized person at all. You know, I grew up and it was very much, you know, what's wrong with you? Like, why are you so messy? Why are you lazy? You know, you can't get yourself straight. And it wasn't until, I was in college and I was taking a psychology class. I learned about ADHD and I was like, oh, you know, that kind of sounds like me. That's where my passion lies in kind of teaching people that they can be organized.
What a perfect thing to have on your resume to set you up as an expert that can go in and help people work through these issues, because you kind of understand what it's like from their side of the fence and you also understand what it's like from the other side of the fence. And you can
absolutely.
Make it work on both sides of the fence, so to speak.
Yeah.
In the last 30 seconds, is there anything else you want to say to the audience? And by the way, this will be out on a podcast, on the Junk Refund Show podcast. It'll be on bbsradio.com's podcast. Is there anything else you want to say to people that'll just help them with this, or anything else you want to say at all about what we talked about today?
I think, you know, if you're struggling with disorganization, whether it's, you know, I can't find my keys in the morning, or, you know, you're overwhelmed with all the stuff that's kind of, you know, closed in around you, I think you should know there are people out there to help. You know, whether it's me, there are plenty of resources out there to help anyone on the organizing spectrum, so to say. And, you know, there are tons of people out there who are, you know, kind and compassionate and understand where you're coming from, and they'll start with right there with you. So yeah.
That's well said. And again, to borrow your words of kindness and compassion, that works in any business. I mean, I'm just here to tell you, 40 years as a salesman, it works in any business. But on a delicate business like helping people with hoarding and some of the psychological sides of clutter and what to do with stuff that means a lot to you, those two words are worth $1 million, in my opinion. Kindness and compassion. And you heard it here first from Mimi Seek. I just want to thank you for being a guest on the show. It's been a lot
of fun.
Thank you
for having me.
You are very welcome. She's at alighterhome.com. Mimi Seek, put that name in the back of your minds and give her a call the next time the word organization pops into your mind. She can help you. I'm here to tell you firsthand. I've seen it firsthand. And thanks again, Mimi, for being on the show. It's been a blast talking to you.
We'll thank
have
you,
to have
Alan.
You back and give us more updates as we go through the years doing this. Thanks again, folks, for listening to the Junk Refund Show. Thanks to Don and Doug Newsome, the founders of BBSRadio.com, and Don, who is our producer, for all the great work that he does. Join us each week, Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, for the Junk Refund Show, where we teach you how to get the junk not only out of your home and out of your garage, but also out of your life. I'm your host, Alan J. Cook. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients, too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.